if your air conditioning or furnace stops working in the middle of the night, on a weekend, or over a holiday, there's no reason to wait to get it fixed. Because Atlas Butler's always open, and we never charge any overtime or after-hours fees.
The Atlas Butler family is here to keep your family safe and comfortable. Call today, get it fixed today. That's our pledge to you.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, DIAH mamas. Sarah here. Matthew and I just launched our latest production together, the Balanced Mama Moment audio series. Who is this for? Any mom looking for more balance in her life, and she's ready to start putting some conscious, powerful, loving, healing energy into herself. This is a guided audio experience of 20 tracks covering everything from how to make a balanced mama moment to body image, sex after motherhood, balance in your relationship, and so much more. We made this for moms just like you and me. So go to sarahbivens.com and click Balanced Mama to learn more and to sign up. Because we don't think twice about investing in our kiddos, so let's take a moment to give back to ourselves. So go sarahbivens.com and click on Balanced Mama.
Hey, I'm Sarah. When planning our home birth, my husband Matthew and I were really frustrated by the lack of empowering and honest home birth resources. So we created this podcast to start a new conversation for moms and families like us. This is Doing It at Home.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Doing It at Home podcast. Today, we welcome back the amazing Anne Margolis to the show. We spoke with Anne back in episode 24 when the show was a little bit younger. Now we're in the 90s and it's just so crazy. But in this episode, we talk specifically about birth trauma, something that impacts a lot more women than I realized and that I think most people walking around realize. A third of women would describe their birth as traumatic in some way. And this is something that we need to pay attention to and we need to learn more about in terms of what it means to experience trauma in some way and know that it looks different for all of us and that sometimes you might not even recognize it as trauma until after the fact. So how you can identify it. And then we talk with Anne about her own experience of experiencing birth trauma and healing through it, and how she now dedicates her life, essentially her energy, her expertise, her insane knowledge to helping women heal from that and really tapping into that incredible capacity that we have to heal down to a cellular level from our past experiences. And this episode is just so, so juicy and full of delicious nuggets for you, for everyone. This impacts all of us because when we can create a healing, loving experience around birth for everyone, we all win. And Anne is just a part of that movement and is making it happen with all the amazing stuff that she does. So I will stop talking and let her take it from here.
Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure. To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. That's tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Hi, Anne. Welcome back to the Doing It at Home podcast.
I'm so happy to be back.
Yes. Gosh, we really appreciate you. So our first episode with you, episode 24, Normal, Natural, and Joyful Childbirth was the title of that episode. And I think that just captured so perfectly this picture that you painted of what birth is and can be. And just to see those words with birth, you know, normal, natural, and joyful, I think it's just so cool. And I love the connection that we've created. We also just published this week, our episode with Deborah Pascale Bonaro, and you know, you were in Orgasmic Birth, the documentary.
She is a dear colleague of mine. She does not live far. You know, we're in the same community, so we've worked together for years. You know, she's a, you know, even before she was, you know, global, you know, she was an amazing childbirth educator and doula, and then she became a trainer, and then she's just gone global, and she's just an amazing gift to the world.
Yes, yes, love it. Birth. I love this, like, this connection, you know, amongst the birth community, you know, and some of the big, heavy players of it. I just love that we've been able to have some of you on the show.
That's awesome.
And when you have your appearance in the documentary, one of the things that's so cool about your part, you know, for those who have watched or who haven't, and just kind of presents all of the stuff, like all of the gear and all of the medical equipment, and just showing how prepared and how well trained midwives are. And you just go through, here's this bag. Oh, and here's this bag. And it's just like each one is the Mary Poppins bag of birth.
She interviewed me for 2 hours.
Wow.
On what I bring to a home birth, right? So like we kind of move in with we bring the birth center to the woman's home. And I was so excited to like share my birth ball and my squatting stool and my squatting rope and my Rebozo, my herbs, my homeopathic remedies. But when it was aired, she focused on the like a medical equipment, and initially I was like, oh my gosh, you know. But she wanted to show that we're not just like waving sage, you know, we're trained medical providers, and we are coming with, you know, the birth center.
I love that.
Hopefully we don't have to use those things, but but it's there if we need it, you know. That's what she wanted to show.
Well, that was great stuff. I loved it. So what we're talking about today is, you know, a topic and a conversation that we've emailed about, you know, a little bit back and forth, and seeing how we could just create this resource and also just support for women and families out there, particularly around trauma that can come up in birth, for mother, for baby, for family. And you have a lot of knowledge and experience in that. So I just thought it would be great for you to come on the show and expand upon that for us. So you have your own, you know, connection with that and why that particular work resonates with you. Could you share some of that?
Yeah. I mean, I got into this, you know, becoming a midwife. That was one of the reasons I wanted to become a midwife, was part what was because of what I was seeing as an obstetric nurse. Even just witnessing what I was seeing as an obstetric nurse on the unit where I was working, you know, created fear. I was attending way more cesareans than I was, you know, than I ever thought I would. I did not, outcomes were not always good for mother or baby. And, you know, that I was young, and it was, you know, that in itself was traumatic, but my own traumatic birth experience, I didn't know it was trauma at the time, but I certainly know now. So it was my own birthing experiences plus my experiences working as a nurse that really stimulated me to really affect change, was to become a midwife. But let's see. So when I was 23, I got pregnant. 23, I got pregnant with my first, and I was working on the unit, the maternity unit. And I had a lot of fear around birth because of what I saw, but I didn't. I had a fear of having major abdominal surgery, because that's, you know, I saw a lot of it, and I didn't really see. It was scary, you know. And I'm this dancer, very athletic, kind of like you, athletic, and I just didn't want to be cut.
Yeah.
And I was scared of a lot of the bad outcomes that I saw for mom and baby. So I was just going in with that, you know. So fear is kind of the and inner stress is really the enemy of life and labor. I mean, when, you know, it doesn't help things when you're trying to give birth and you are scared. So when I came into the hospital, I was given the royal treatment because I was a nurse on the unit, you know. So, hey, one of our nurses is giving birth, and I had a good obstetrician, and I liked him very much as a person. I knew he was an excellent surgeon, but I didn't want surgery. I planned having a natural birth, even though I never saw one. on the unit that I worked. I just remember learning about it in nursing school. You know, that's what excited me about, one of the things that excited me was my obstetric rotation and learning about it, natural birth. But so here I was, and I was just given the routine treatment. So just going in there and putting on a hospital gown really was the first step in me relinquishing my power and gave me the feeling that I know nothing, they know everything, and I'm sick.
Wow.
that's like the feeling that you get. You know, that's why I always say when you're giving birth in a hospital, wear your own clothes. I didn't make that up. You know, the Marsden Wagner, you know, the former chair of the World Health Organization for maternal child health. I mean, he talks about one of the worst things a woman could do in labor is to put on a hospital gown. but anyway, so I put on the hospital gown and then you're put to bed. I was put to bed and can't eat and drink. And so I had the IV, you know, so I'm already feeling like I had to do my year of medicine, surgery, nursing. So, it kind of just creates this feeling of dependency. So I wasn't allowed to eat and drink. And then they put this, the continuous electronic monitor on me. I'm on my back. I can't move. So no animal could labor normally in this situation. Mm. So certainly a human being could not. And it was no wonder that, you know, I had to dilate a centimeter an hour and I wasn't doing that. It wasn't happening. And the doctor, I had no control. Like, that's how I felt. I had no control, no say. And the doctor, you know, walked out of there. He kept coming in and sticking his hands up me, and sometimes without even asking, you know, to doing a vaginal exam.
Yeah.
And just like walking out and telling the nurse she's still 4. And, you know, so I was like disregarded, you know, not treated, like, you know, he said to the nurse outside, hang pit. Now, I, as a nurse, I know what that is, Pitocin. She comes, you know, in and she starts putting medication into my IV. And I'm like, I don't want that. You know, I don't want Pitocin, because I knew that that would, you know, create this domino effect and make everything harder and stronger. And then I would need an epidural, which is exactly what happened. You know, and she said to me, well, honey, you don't want a cesarean. So I said, of course, you know, no. She feared me into having the medication. So I felt like I had no say. You know, I was just in a vulnerable position and they know what they're doing and they're giving me this, you know, and then of course everything got stronger and harder. My Lamaze went out the window and here I am having a big needle put into my spine. You know, it just felt very medical and scary. Mm-hmm. And what happened after the epidural was her heart rate bottomed. Mm-hmm. Her heart rate dropped to a very low level. And they called a stat emergency cesarean. So here I was, you know, there was this crisis in the room, right? The life of my baby was being threatened. My life was being threatened because I have seen women die during surgery. You know, people in our culture underestimate the psychology of giving birth, how significant it is for mother, for baby. And it can be a beautiful one and it can be a very traumatic one. A third of all women describe birth as traumatic. That is wild. That's statistic. Yeah. So I didn't know this at the time, right? But I was just, here I was being, you know, there was this crisis, like an ER scene. Everyone's whisking me into the OR, prepping me. And there was this whole emergency. And then everybody left me alone. And they told me they were going to wait for the assistant surgeon to come. And I am lying in the operating room, you know, completely prepared to be cut, and nobody's monitoring my baby. They didn't allow my husband in, and I'm alone. And time was passing, and I was looking at the clock at one point, and I'm like, it's an hour, you know, I've been here an hour, and during that hour. You know, stat emergency cesarean. I mean, in a home birth, if, you know, my section, C-section rate is 5%. I can get a woman if a woman needs a cesarean, I can have them being transported, you know, all prepared in less than that time. But anyway, in that hour, I was freaked out that my baby was damaged, and then my baby's dead. And I, don't ask how this happened, but it's the epidural, that, cause I was in such a state of panic and my life is over. My daughter, you know, I my baby's dead. Like I was really, in that mindset and in a panic. And I just remember, I started pushing. The epidural allowed my body to just, open. And I started pushing and I called out for help and the doctor comes running in. It's this, another crisis. Get me the vacuum, he says. And he cuts in a large episiotomy and he vacuums her out. And I did not want to see her. I was convinced like that. Yeah. So, miraculously, which, you know, I know that, electronic fetal monitoring is so often inaccurate, and that is why it's responsible for a lot of unnecessary cesarean section. I mean, that's in the research, 3 to 5 times, increase in cesarean without, affecting fetal outcome, you know, decreasing rates of oxygen deprivation and cerebral palsy. So, but they're still, you know, monitoring continuously all over the place. It's not evidence-based care. But anyway, I didn't want to see her. And she's apparently physically fine. Like she's pink. They didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to resuscitate her. She's breathing. She's a heartbeat. And everybody's all excited. I was not fine. I was not fine at all. So some of the, now I know that this is what is called birth trauma. It is very real. It is a normal reaction to experiencing a real trauma, a scary experience, that can be life-threatening for you or the people that you love. Right. Now as a midwife, I know, you know, and I hear from women around the world, in addition to women in my own practice, that come to me so traumatized by their first birth experience. And some of the things that can contribute, like, of course, if a woman has a history of previous trauma or abuse or, you know, emotional, mental illnesses, things like that, they're more at risk. But I'm talking about the main, you know, the general population. There is a, you know, if we're talking about a third of women describing their birth as traumatic, and it's affecting, the statistics that right now are about 9% of new mothers actually have what is called a post-traumatic stress disorder, which was kind of coined after the Vietnam War, when Vietnam veterans were coming home and universally experiencing a set of symptoms, which is just a normal reaction to a trauma. So now, you know, and medical providers and even, you know, and people are not aware of it, even though it's very well researched. More and more is, you know, coming out about it. There's more and more books on it. And a lot of times women are prescribed, you know, antidepressants for postpartum depression, when that is so not the way to heal it. And, you know, so fear, you know, when fear and panic, when there's a real perceived trauma or scary bad experience, that can happen. Let's say, the kind of the risk factors that can set this up, is a feeling of being out of control, like no control, not being treated with dignity, privacy, sort of a hostile, difficult environment where the woman is giving birth, a feeling of not being heard, a feeling of things being done without her consent, risky interventions, and you know, like there's this. And exactly what the doctor said to me, but what's the problem? You have a healthy baby, which is actually the worst thing to say. It totally invalidates what it's going through, and not, you know, not understanding the deep psychological imprint of this in a woman. So some of the symptoms, you know, that women can feel, which I felt, after the birth, you know, so it was that I was having sort of, repetitive, intrusive memories and flashbacks of the birth. Like I was kind of re-experiencing in my mind, And then it would cause me anxiety and panic. Mm-hmm. And then when someone would talk about their birth story inside, I would get that it's the fight or flight response that sets off, you know, when there is danger at the time. But then when exposed to a trigger, that could be seeing another pregnant woman, thinking of even going back to work and looking at and being in that environment, you know, people talking about my birth. You know, there were certain things that sort of set off just unconsciously. It just started to create this fight or flight response in me. You know, the cortisol, the adrenaline, you know, all the symptoms that people feel when they're panicked. Mm. I had nightmares, and I was really afraid to go back to work. I was not depressed. I was just, I remember feeling very hypervigilant, like just like on guard, like overly alert kind of a thing. Those were my experiences. And now I know that that's pretty much a universal post-traumatic experience. Animals like in the wild, and Peter Levine is, you know, one of the major, you know, there's so much research on the trauma response of an individual when exposed to any kind of trauma, any kind of life-threatening, scary, dangerous, bad experience, where there's intense pain or horror or fear, helplessness, you know, that kind of thing. Animals, if a deer sees a tiger in the wild, right, in Africa, let's say, and the deer, the fight or flight response, which we are wired to have that response, you know, that the body sets off a certain amount of reaction so that deer is going to run, that deer is going to get away from danger. And when the deer gets away from danger and the tiger doesn't catch the deer actually, all animals shake. They shake it off. It's a bodily response, right? Humans don't really have, don't do that. It's like repressed.
Yeah,
I kept hearing, you know, she's fine, you know, just get, you know, your baby's fine. Like, I don't know what, you know, what, you see, you know, so then there's this isolation because you can't really talk about it.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
So you feel alone, you feel like a freak.
feel
abnormal. When I wasn't abnormal, I was having a normal response. So it's so serious that there's a grassroots organization that's becoming that became pretty big, which is Improving Birth, and they coined the term obstetric violence, which is coercive, disrespectful care that is contributing to this post-traumatic stress, this birth trauma, and it's playing out in labor and delivery units around the world. So much so that the World Health Organization has called for increased scrutiny of disrespectful childbirth practices.
Wow.
You know, this must be taken seriously. It's been compared almost like to it should be taken as seriously as rape, because when a woman is raped, there's that vulnerability, you know, same as in giving birth, there's vulnerability, there's invasive interventions that are very intimate and sometimes difficult for a person to assimilate, this loss of control, you know, and if you don't do this, your baby could be, you know, die or be damaged. So there's coercive sort of, unwanted procedures, right? And it, you know, maternity care in the United States has enough problems with, you know, just being extremely expensive and having high rates of mortality and morbidity for moms and babies, high C-section rates. So psychological outcomes of birth was just not studied as much. It's just like not the same, you know, concern. So it's been my passion is to prevent it and do my part in empowering women and their families so that they can, as much as possible, create an experience around, you know, pregnancy and birth, whether they decide to birth in the home, hospital, or birth center, or even in the operating room. You know, if a person needs, you know, like I said, my cesarean section rate is 5%. So it should be rare that somebody actually has a complication that needs cesarean, but that's still a birth and that can still be done. You know, sometimes it's just giving women their voice, you know, explaining what you're doing kindly and compassionately so that the woman, you know, can feel like she has a say in how she wants to do something, or, you know, speaking kindly, just getting, you know, eye contact, respectful communication. You know, sometimes that can just make the huge difference in whether a woman experiences trauma, even when interventions are needed.
Yeah.
Or not.
First, I want to acknowledge your sharing your story. And then as a part of that, like how it has just funneled into your passion and what you do. And just acknowledge that and give a bit of gratitude for what you're doing, because it takes that step of, you know, peeling back even more vulnerability in your case to share and to put it out there, and then to be willing to do something, like to take action. So I think that's incredible. And I also think it's great how you acknowledge that sometimes with a traumatic experience, it may not even be recognized until much later and kind
right.
of filed as a traumatic experience. And I think that's something, at least hearing that was helpful for me. And I think it gives you this, I don't want to say permission, but kind like an allowance and a space to remember it or to acknowledge it. Because sometimes, you know, when the windows or the doors close on an experience, you know, with that suppression you were talking about, it's kind of like, it's over. So if you were going to have anything about it, you know, that time has passed. So now we need to move on. And especially in motherhood, when if you moved out of a traumatic birth experience, now you have this whole new journey you're on and this life form that is completely dependent on you, and you're learning and navigating that thing while still trying to heal from what you can't fully understand happened
to
you.
No. And it's something, yeah, it's very subconscious. Like you can't fully understand, you know, trauma is just processed in the body and needs to be healed from a somatic, you know, a lot of the trauma research now is how to heal from trauma. And that's why I do clarity breath work. It has to be healed through, you know, a body experience, you know, shaking out, releasing the energy that were trapped and stored in cells all over our body. And, you know, it affects, you know, for a woman who's postpartum, like I remember every time I used to look at my baby in the beginning, I would just cry, you know, cry because like I loved her with every piece of my body, with every part of my body. But it was like, I was, you know, number one, grateful she was there, but I was just, it was, I'm not sure if it was a trigger, but I definitely said to my husband, I'm not having any more babies. And, you know, I'm amazed that I just, I remember my first day back at work. I just said to myself, without knowing any kind of, you know, anything about trauma, just like, I'm just going to hold my head up and I'm just going to just jump right in and face it.
That's wow. what I mean.
But it came out in other ways, you
right.
know, so that wasn't the way to heal, but mm-hmm. you know, that was a big story.
Yeah. So then how did you heal it, and what were some of the things that worked for you? Because, you know, just like we may not recognize it in the same time frame, also the scale of trauma and, you know, where it falls on that is going to be different. You know, I'm sure traumatic experiences, just like every birth is different, how we experience it is going to be different. So I know there's got to be a million ways and unique opportunities for healing it for each individual, but what were some of the things that were helpful for you?
Well, what was helpful for me at the time was that I had a very loving and supportive family, and just surrounding myself. I just felt like I needed to be surrounded by love and nurturing and care. That you know, but what that didn't necessarily heal it, but it just helped.
Sure,
it helped so much. And what really healed it was my, because I had a very similar birth actually the second time, but what really healed it was when I went to midwifery school. I heard this was real, and you know, this is what we studied. And then I started talking, and then as my own healing birth, my own healing tube births with midwives was when I was given care that was respectful and compassionate and kind and gave me back my power and my voice. And, you know, so just having an experience like that was healing. Talking to other women who had the same experiences. There's a lot of awesome books about birth trauma, rebounding from childbirth, survivor moms, women's stories, traumatic childbirth. I mean, heal your birth story. I mean, there's a lot of how to heal a bad birth. There's a lot of books that I started reading about. But I didn't really actually heal until I did the clarity breath work. So I had I knew certain things were, you know, and I also had a history of other traumas as a child that I didn't necessarily know, but you know, it was more subconscious. Right. I mean, I knew there was abuse, but I didn't know how it was necessarily playing out in my body, but it's trapped energy in the body that needs to, and that's why I was always very athletic and very into dance and because I felt like I could move my emotions and process emotions through dance without even knowing I was doing that. You know how you just go for a run.
Yeah.
You just get it out. And songs would move me and I would just move and express emotions through, whether it's a sad song, an angry song, or just a sexy song or hip-hop, whatever, you know, you're just moving my emotion. Now I know why I was doing that, you know, had a deeper purpose, but I just knew that it felt good. It felt good to be very active, you know, but I was the master of repression. You know, I just repressed. I didn't know. I mean, we didn't, you know, that's all I knew, really. I just buried it or got busy with work or, you know, but it comes out. Like if you don't process it, you know, so I got my wake up call. I got sick, my fourth baby postpartum, and that was my wake up call. And then that's what really started me on this need to heal something that was bothering me, but I couldn't put my finger on it. But I knew I was triggered easily by certain things. I knew I was very reactive to certain things. I knew that there was something in me that needed to be released. That was ugly. That was dark. There was emotional pain in my body. I knew that, but I had tried, I'm very holistic. I tried everything from, you know, homeopathic remedies to acupuncture to, you know, all sorts of holistic modalities. Therapy never worked. That just made it worse. Just to sit and talk about how awful I felt, that just made it worse. And I didn't really feel like I had access to what was governing, you know, why I was anxious or afraid of certain things or felt, you know, certain experiences or having nightmares. Like I just didn't. And I went to a psychiatrist, and they just wanted to prescribe me drugs. Drugs didn't help. One psychiatrist, she was holistic, said to me, "You have chronic post-traumatic stress, and you know, since your childhood and the birth, and there were some other adult hits, but it was mostly childhood stuff." And she's the one that told me that, you know, to heal trauma, like somatic experience, all the trauma research is now about not healing through talk therapy. You need to do certain modalities to rewire the brain or to release the trauma energy from the body. And that's when I got into clarity breath work, which saved my life. And when I did that kind of work, it felt like I took 3,000 billion tons of bricks off my body, off my back, that I had been carrying for years, and I just let them go. They're gone. It's gone. Like, and, you know, when I felt that and I witnessed it in all the other people taking the workshops and the group sessions and the private sessions, it's such a powerful modality, and it's simple and it's safe. And that's why I became a clarity breathwork practitioner, because not just to help myself, but, you know, pretty much, at least almost well, if you're human, you have baggage, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, some it affects more than others. But I would say at least a third, or maybe even more, of women that come to me with past, not necessarily birth trauma, but you know, they're plagued by inner stress or depression or anxiety, or they have a history. Well, you know, the stats of, you know, almost, you know, I think it's 1 in 3 women are affected by sexual abuse and violence at some point in their life. So this is just such a powerful modality that can release that and help, you know, a woman could really feel complete healing. Mm-hmm. Or a man, you know, anybody, because yeah, the father is affected. You know, everybody can experience trauma from. And you know, what I wanted to say about birth in terms of, you know, there's decades of scientific research, for, you know, in the field of embryology, neurology, psychology, that babies are fully conscious, not only when they're born, but in the womb, and that they form memories. They feel trauma, nonverbal memories. So, for example, you know, we knew for years that you know, if you take, you know, drugs or alcohol or nicotine or poor nutrition, you know, that can have certain infections can have traumatic effects on the baby, physically and emotionally. But now we're really the focused on how does, you know, what the mom feels, baby feels. So mm-hmm. How does acute emotional trauma in the mom or chronic stress in the mom, all those hormones, the happy hormones get passed to the baby, and so do the stressful hormones. And so what the mom eats, drinks, breathes, thinks, feels, experiences really affect the baby. So we're just talking about like just think, a baby is heart to heart in the womb, you know, just comforted close to the mom. And just think about like some of the standard routine procedures, right? A baby, you know, it's very common that a mom is given Pitocin to make the contraction stronger. She's given anesthetics, narcotics. Sometimes the you know, electronic monitor is stuck on the baby's head. The cord's clamped right away, so the baby doesn't get that the cord blood. The baby, it comes out, there's bright lights, a lot of noise. There's sort of a rushed, hassling, handling kind of experience. The baby's they put tubes down the baby's throat to suction fluids. Baby's put in an isolette, taken away to the nursery, you know, and just think of the procedures that are done in the intensive care unit. So, and the shots and, you know, circumcision. So the babies feel and remember this. Mm. And, so it just like behooves us to what can we do to really, and, you know, and there's a whole field of research, birthpsychology.com, the American Association, I think it's of pre and perinatal psychology. You know, there's tons of people that you know, that are producing reputable research, and I love Karen. Have you heard of Karen Strange?
No.
Oh my gosh, she's an amazing midwife. KarenStrange.com. She goes around the country, probably the globe, teaching neonatal resuscitation to out of hospital. Or pretty much she can teach it to anybody, but her specialty is to teaching it to adult hospital providers. Mm. And she is very, has a lot of very interesting articles about this on her website in terms of what can we do for the baby to help the baby process the trauma.
Mm. Yeah. And, you
know, there's so many things. And we have such a capacity to heal. But the baby needs to tell the story and, you know, skin to skin. And there's a whole, bunch of modalities that moms can just learn to do. Dads can learn to do. Partners can learn to do, to just be very slow and like dim light and calm and kind of let the baby, you know, tell the story. They will communicate the story. You know, because babies who experience trauma have a series of symptoms. Mm-hmm. You know, they're hyper alert, they're not consolable, they're irritable, they start quickly, they don't sleep well. you know, they might sleep too much and feeding difficulties. So sometimes, you know, this is thought to be a physical problem when it's really just they had their nervous system was, you know, traumatized. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's crucial that early age, it's a newly developing brain. And we're learning now, you know, like all it affects like our learning capacity, like all ADHD and mm-hmm. all the sensory problems and the autistic spectrum, you know, issues. A lot of them have been linked to birth trauma.
Right.
Oh, but there's hope, you know, we mm-hmm. can, we definitely, well, we certainly can prevent it, you know, but there's also ways to heal it.
Yeah.
At the time.
Yeah. I love what you said, that we have such a capacity to heal.
Yeah.
I love that, yeah. that, you know, yeah. and to just create more things around that support that statement, that are indicative, that show that, like, all of those things are going to help with this whole process. Right. I want to take a step back just for 1 minute. And yeah. if you could give a little bit of context, I'm sure there's a lot that goes into it, but a little bit of what Clarity Breath Work is, just in a few words for those listening who want to know more about it or want to understand kind of the gist of what it is.
Well, let me just tell you how popular it is. I mean, in Europe and a lot of parts of the world, they have breath centers like they have yoga studios.
Oh, that's, you know, cool.
It's so awesome. Like this, I know some of my fellow colleagues from around the world think this is just going to be, you know, the wave of the future. Like in the United States, even there'll be as many breath studios as there are yoga studios where you just go and breathe in this with the facilitator. But anyway, breathing is, there's so much breathing. It's a method of continuous, conscious, connective breathing with an intention. And it allows you to access 100% of your entire lung capacity. Because okay. normally we use about 20 to 30% of our lung capacity. And so when for an hour you are breathing completely and fully, and one no pause, one breath after the other with a very relaxed jaw and open mouth, breathing into the heart, It puts the body in a semi-conscious state, and a lot of the energy of the trauma can be released.
Mm.
But oxygen, you know, there's so many different levels that it helps. Like it allows the body to reset, completely reset. Oxygen is the main fuel. Breathing in, inhaling oxygen is the main fuel. It's the main source of energy for the body. So if we're only breathing 20 to 30%, just imagine that, you know, we're breathing 100%, and it gets into all of ourselves so that all of ourselves can heal and operate more efficiently on a physical level. In terms of an emotional level, so when a person is in a fight or flight trauma situation, they have a car accident, they feel intense fear, and they hold their breath, and any emotion that they feel at that time gets trapped as unprocessed trauma energy stored in the body. So it is just a way in which the body can kind of get in a state so the body can, it empowers the body to heal on its own and shake out, like kind of release that trauma energy. On a spiritual level, it's there's no religious dogma, there's no spiritual anything about mm-hmm. it, other than it does, I'm amazed to watch, it does enable a person to connect with the less tangible, the spiritual aspects of themselves and all that is, because, you know, now cultures around the world, whether you go yoga, you know, prana was always considered the breath, you know, breath, the life force, the connection between humans and spirit. All the biblical religions talk about God putting breath into, you know, Adam and Eve, and they became human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So there is sort of this notions around the world that spirituality, the connection to spirituality, is through the breath.
Yeah.
But even without needing to know that, just you know, breathing in this way has such immense physical and emotional benefits that it's behooves. I think every person who is in the healthcare profession needs to know about this so they can refer people to breath workers, you know, people who can facilitate either private or group sessions, because it's such a powerful way to release trapped, you know, inner stress, emotional pain and trauma from the body mm-hmm. that impacts our lives, you know, so mm-hmm. it really leads to such a feeling of relief, of well-being, of joy, like no other.
That's amazing. And this is something pregnant women can do?
Oh, absolutely. Cool. Absolutely. You can go on there's the claritybreathwork.com website.
Great. That was my next question.
Yeah. Where people can find, you know, local providers. I do it on Skype. There are other providers that do it on Skype. If, you know, I do it locally, but I'm saying for people who can't find, a breath worker can do it on Skype. There's the Breath Guru, in England. He has an app actually, but I think it's better to, you know, I think it's because it's so powerful. I wouldn't do it by yourself, you mm-hmm. know, on an app, but I think the app is good to reinforce it. But it's all over the world. I mean, it's okay. In Israel, it's in Australia. I mean, you can look up breath work, rebirthing, holotropic breath, but Clarity Breathwork is the way in which I was trained, and it's all kind of a lot of this breath work is kind of all has a little bit different branches out from the originator, you know, when it originally was developed.
Okay.
But it's all very similar.
Okay.
In terms of, you know, using conscious breath guided and supported by a facilitator who can, you know, and it's a way to, like, yeah, you know, part of the process is when you're breathing, a lot of the pain comes up, and it's always, you know, like in Clarity Breathwork, we always like kind of start from the earliest traumas going up because a lot of trauma that we experienced as a baby or as a child, as a teenager, usually the earlier traumas are going to impact how we act as adults. So sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of the earlier stuff comes up first.
Sure.
And so we incur, you know, so what happens is the emotion, the sensations of emotions come up, and people sometimes are afraid of it, but like every emotion is safe. Just feel it, allow it, don't bury it, just feel it. It's okay. Feel it. And then, you know, just breathing into it, and then it just shakes or releases from the body. It's so powerful. That's... And like anyone with lungs can do it.
Yeah. I love it. That, I mean, I'm going to look into that. That sounds amazing. This has been so awesome. I'd like to kind of wrap up with just uh-huh. some final thoughts that you have for any mom or mother to be or woman, whoever, any person listening to this right now who is working with some trauma that they've either recently experienced or recently identified. And what are some steps or some feedback, some support that you want to leave them with?
Well, once someone is already battling, I have a well-being assessment on my emotional well-being assessment. It's just a free assessment on my website. So it's homesweethomebirth.com. And then /clarity-breathwork-New York. I think it's new-New York. But anyway, if you go on homesweethomebirth.com, you'll see Clarity Breathwork in the top.
Cool.
In the top.
Cool. And I'll include links to all of this, by the way, listeners, and Anne listed a lot of great resources. And so these will all be on the Doing It at Home website, DIHpodcast.com. So if you can't, you know, write it down right now or whatever, we'll have it all there for you.
Yeah. And that, that's a well-being assessment. And if some, I think in terms of, I've tried it all and I've had a lot of trauma, and I really think this is one of the, you know, the top, this saved my life, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think, it rather than talk therapy and medication, I think, I mean, you know, that may be helpful in adjunct if someone is really severe, but, I think this does it. And my main interest is preventing it, right?
Sure.
Is preventing it. So, you know, maybe for your listeners, I have like a free download, a gift of my 154 of my favorite resources for pre-pregnancy, pregnancy, birth, postpartum, mamahood, and women inspiration, baby, you know, siblings, dads. But it's, I think when you empower yourself with information, you know, you might make different decisions on how you want to experience a birth, which is a peak life experience in your life. So that's homesweethomebirth.com/gift/. And then in my course and in my, which is basically how I take women through my practice is in my Love Your Birth course is how, looking at every single possible intervention and procedure and test from the flu vaccine, from the pertussis vaccine, from testing for genetic disorders, for Down syndrome and other chromosomal abnormalities, all the different tests and procedures that are done in pregnancy, birth, and to the labor, and you know, and to the baby and postpartum. What are the pros and cons? How do you feel about that? And like kind of helping you making a decision, and then and you know having that to kind of lead you where you know and with whom you want to have this incredible experience, and you know bringing humanity and celebration and love of the experience back into it, right? No matter how it turns out. So that's I go into in detail about, you know, in my course and with the women in my practice and online, you know, I do online, the whole thing birthed online consulting. Cause on Instagram, people are messaging me, you know, I had this horrible traumatic birth experience my first time, and they explained me the whole story and how can I heal and have a better birth next time? Well, I can't answer that on Instagram. Right. So that's the really best help people. That's a, you know, that's a consultation. So that kind of birthed this online, you know, midwifery consulting, which I just love. I mean, I've been connecting with women all over the world and you know, it's really been, amazing Ooh. Journey, this whole online social media, ability to be able to really affect change, you know, all over.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Reaching and helping women all over.
Well, that's what you're doing. And we're just so grateful to be able to be in the energy of it and watch it and help support it in any way that we can here. And thank you so much for taking the time, and just your knowledge just continues to like blow me away. You know, in our first episode, I was just like, wow, you know, kind of mouth open. This is awesome. And then here I am again, experiencing it. So I'm extremely grateful. Listeners, I'm going to have all of this, like I said, for you on our website. If you want to connect with Anne, learn more about her, you know, direct you to her website, homesweethomebirth.com. And, yes, just thank you so much and continue to do
pleasure.
What you're doing. It's
I
amazing.
Wanna add, thank you so much. I want to add one more thing.
Please.
And it's that to women who have suffered from any sort of trauma, I know what it feels like. I know the deepest, darkest pains, and I know despair, and I know hopelessness, and I know the feeling that I will never heal. And that is a lie. That is such a lie. The fact that I came from all of that and I completely healed, it's so possible for you.
Wow.
You know, that there is such hope.
Yeah, I felt that. I could feel that on like a very deep level when you said that. So thank you. Quick note about the Doing It at Home podcast. Matthew and I are not doctors or medical professionals, and nothing we say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. If you have medical or health-related questions, please take them to a trained professional. We're here simply to entertain you with stories and conversations about pregnancy, birth, and parenthood.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad-approved? Dadages. Hi there, I'm Chad Higley, If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.